Welcome to
BirdWorld.com. A podcast for those involved in designing, developing, and running websites. This is what everybody waits for. Hello and welcome to the 57th episode of BuyAgWorld.com, a podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul Bag, and joining me today is...
Marcus Lillington. This is obviously the Heinz show.
What?
57th variety is whatever it is, yeah.
Right, that's...
I know, that's stretching it a bit thin, isn't it?
It is, just somewhat, but don't worry about it. Right, that's it now. You take over. I'm done. It's too gross.
Oh, stop it. Stop
it's
it.
Too gross to say what I've been doing this weekend.
Well, don't then.
It's been sick and, yeah, not pleasant.
How unpleasant. Well, I'm moaning as well because one of our project managers has gone away and I'm having to do real work.
Oh.
I'm having to, you know, like put this, who's going to do this week and that person's going to do this and the client needs to send in this. Moan.
So if you are a Headscape client and you have Marcus project managing you, I do apologise. Pete Boston will be back soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel sick as a dog. And I'm speaking tonight and I'm going to Florida next week and I'm like, oh, I just want to go back to bed. So it's this just, is going to be a really fun podcast.
It's just nerves, isn't it? You're just sick because of the nerves.
I am terrified, but that is not so much of tonight, because Taunton doesn't seem such a big venue.
Yeah, so all those people down in Taunton who are listening, he doesn't really mean it.
I feel, yeah, you're unloved and unwanted. No, I don't mean it. I'm looking forward to tonight, actually. It should be quite fun. Mm. But yes, the States does seem an insurmountable object right now, because I feel so rough. So on that basis, we've got a really crap show lined up for you this week. The first thing we're going to look at is browser problems galore. We seem to have developed a few twitchy little problems on both Internet Explorer 7 and the new version of Firefox. We're going to talk a little bit about those.
Okay.
Now, we were supposed to be talking about communities and all of that kind of good stuff this week, and that's what I indeed promised you last week, but you're not going to get that, partly because I'm feeling ill, partly because I've just got too much to do that I didn't have time to prepare the community episode, and I feel it's a really important subject, and it's not one that I want to gloss over. So instead of that, we have an equally good interview with Ben Hennick, who is somebody that writes for a List Apart website and did a really good article about the problems of working with standards. And I know a lot of you are sick of me talking about standards, but I think this one will be quite interesting from the point of view that it's talking about all the problems with web standards and facing up to the reality of what developing with CSS is all about. So we're going to look at that in a little bit more detail later. We're also going to look at the idea of a website constitution, which I thought was quite interesting and has come up over the last week and caught my attention. And then finally we're going to look at where do you get your design inspiration from. It's always hard to find places to be inspired, and we have kind of touched on this before, but we've got a question on it, so I thought I would revisit it. So that's what's lined up in this week's show. And hopefully I can kind of keep up a little bit of momentum and not just kind of start getting more and more monotone and drifting off and then dashing to the loo every 5 minutes.
You didn't need to add that bit, did you?
No.
You didn't?
No, I didn't.
That was unnecessary.
I bet you're glad we're doing this via Skype and you're not sitting in a room with me.
Oh dear, that just is not a pleasant thought.
I'm not the nicest person to be with.
I'll try not to do any work and type and stuff in the background, and I'll try and listen in.
Okay? Yeah, because I'm going to need you to prop me up this week. Okay, so let's move on to the news.
BirdWorld.com.
Okay, so our number one news story for today's episode is the various browser problems that seem to have perked up over the last couple of weeks. So we've had the launch of IE7 and we've had the launch of Firefox 2. And that, I mean, unsurprisingly, people have been hunting high and low to find problems with IE7 just so that they could go, yeah, see, yeah, because that's what people are like. But I felt that I should contribute to this pettiness. And so, actually, I found a little problem that depresses me a little bit because it's in a feature that I thought was one of the most exciting things about IE7, but it's really beginning to irritate me already. It's not a rendering problem per se or anything like that. It's to do with the new zoom function in IE7. Have you used that yet,
Marcus? I haven't even tried it yet, actually. I don't even know where it is. I'm going to fire it up and have a go.
It's in the bottom right-hand corner.
Oh, yeah, I see, yeah.
And you can zoom a page in now, which is absolutely great. Because before IE's...
Cool, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, IE's zoom text resizing functionality was a bit rubbish, really.
It was crap, and didn't
really do anything.
Well, this works.
Which works very well, yeah, and it looks great, doesn't it? What site are you viewing?
BBC News.
BBC News. See? Great. Fixed width site. Works perfectly. But you then do the same thing to, say, Boagwa, which is a scalable site, and immediately you'll see the problem. And the problem is the fact that if you're scaling a fixed-width site, chances are you've got a bit of white space or whatever to the right-hand side, so your design just expands into that white space. If you've got a scalable site, however, you find that it immediately starts horizontally scrolling, which is a bit rubbish, really. So it's almost a bit of a kind of kiss of death, that's too strong a word, but it's certainly a drawback now to scalable sites because, you know, within a few months, IE7 is going to be the dominant browser. Everybody's going to be using that as their scaling method. And especially if, like with Boagwood, you've got kind of significant navigation or content on that right-hand side, as soon as you start scaling, that stuff disappears and it becomes very awkward. So it's a bit of a bad implementation for it. And it's strange because from what I've read, although I confess I haven't checked it myself because I've been too busy dying of illness, but IE7 have ripped this off of Opera that have been doing this for a while. Mm. And I haven't checked because it's funny, isn't it? Because it's not a browser I use regularly. You can't picture how it works. But apparently from what I've heard on the forum... Opera doesn't do it like that. It will scale up to the 100% width, you know, of the browser window, and it kind of won't break beyond that. Now, I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I don't know whether I believe it or not. But there's got to be a better solution to this.
But even on fixed width sites, once you get past the width of the window, it side scrolls.
Yeah, yeah, which is kind of fair enough. But the fact that the minute you start scaling with a site that fills the browser window, it kind of looks a bit crap. So I don't like that very much. That's my little moan at IE7, which I've only kind of put in, really, because I'm going to have a moan at Firefox 2, and it just seems wrong to moan at Firefox without moaning at IE7 as well.
Yeah, well, people will talk.
I know. They'll think that I'm pro-Microsoft. So you have to be balanced in these things.
Absolutely.
So there's a little bit of a problem that's come up with Firefox 2. Now, I'm desperately trying to remember who it was that found this problem. I think it was Jez Lemon, who is a prominent accessibility guy. And there's a problem with Firefox 2 and access keys, which is it's going to be a real pain in the neck. So, well, it kind of is and it isn't. It is for us as Headscape, because we do a lot of public sector stuff, and we do a lot of public sector stuff in the UK. For like government organisations and people like that. I'm just seeing if I can find the article, actually. I should have had it up ready, but I'm sick. Leave me alone.
Oh, stop it.
No, I can't find it. That's really annoying. Not quickly, anyway.
Explain what the problem is.
Right, so the problem is, normally, in order to trigger a... access key, right? So the idea of access keys is keyboard shortcuts to stuff on websites. Yep. In order to trigger one of those keyboard shortcuts, you press Alt and then the letter that's associated with any particular part of the navigation. Mm-hmm. So, like, often it's Alt S to go to search or whatever. See what I mean?
Yep.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Totally.
So, but the problem with that is it can conflict with the kind of browser's own keyboard shortcuts, if that makes sense. So, for example, people expect to press Alt F to bring up the file menu. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody has associated F with a function within the web page, you get a conflict between the two. The web page overrides, and the user might expect to get the drop down from the kind of menu bar, and actually they're getting taken to the footer. I don't know. That starts with F, doesn't it?
Yep.
So Firefox 2 has valiantly decided to work around this problem, which they've done really well by, well, kind of really well, looks like it's really well, by going Alt, Shift, and then the key. So Alt, Shift, F, for example. Now, this has two problems. One is that this functionality has been created for people with motor skill problems, so that they can use the keyboard. So they do have to kind of do contortions in order to do Alt, F, and Shift all at the same time. So that's one problem, but let's set aside that. The other problem is it now means that you can't use any numeric keys. So you can't have where previously you would have had Alt 1, Alt 2, Alt 3, or Alt 4, or whatever.
Yeah.
If you go Alt Shift 1, what you're actually doing is getting the exclamation mark.
On a UK keyboard.
UK keyboard, yeah. So, which is a particular problem because in the UK, the government has laid down some kind of guidelines of what government websites should use as keyboard shortcuts, and they're all numeric values.
Exactly.
So it's screwed. So yes, there's a problem with Firefox as well. So a few little problems are raising their heads. When the IE7 came out, just on a slight aside, when IE7 came out, somebody did a test of all the FTSE 100 websites to see if they screwed up in IE7.
Right.
And on the basis of those sites and the number that screwed up, they estimate that worldwide there's something like 12,731,218 sites that need to be changed.
Ooh, blimey. So, I haven't noticed anything, and I'm not a prolific web user, but probably more than most. And I haven't noticed anything that I think, oh, that's broken.
Ah, well, there you go.
You
obviously don't visit the right sites.
Yeah, I need to go and see some FTSE 100 sites, obviously.
Yeah.
So FTSE 100, by the way, to all our American listeners, is the top 100 companies in the UK.
Yeah. Fascinating.
They might have been going, what on earth's FTSE?
No, leave them guessing. All these American programs, they always have references we don't understand, so I don't see why we should explain ourselves to those foreign swine. I'm in a grumpy mood as well as ill. Okay, and the next news story that I wanted to mention is that Bruce Lawson, another accessibility guru here in the UK, has come up with quite an interesting idea I quite like, called a website constitution. And I think this would work really well for us. I think we seriously ought to consider this. What are you humming at? You don't even know what I'm going to say.
Oh, no, but don't like the sound of it. Sounds like sort of, you know, a bit sort of twaddly to me. But
twaddly? What's twaddly mean?
I don't know. Like, it's nothing of any substance.
It's a good idea, right? The logic goes like this, okay? That, so with big organisations, right, like the kind of public sector organisations we work with, or big corporates, or any large website, okay, the problem that you have with these websites is that, one, there's lots of people discussing and debating, and it's all designed by committee and all that kind of stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And secondly, that even once the website's live, there's kind of, problems sneak in as time goes on. So somebody suddenly decides that actually it would be a really good idea to have this massive flash video playing 6 months, a year down the line. So what Bruce is suggesting is we put together a website constitution which lays out the do's and don'ts for the website, and say things like, accessibility is always going to be our primary focus, and that, you know, nothing should come above that. All of our code should always be semantic. Our pages should endeavor to download within this length of time. It should do this, it should do that, it should do the other. See what I mean? So it's all laid out up front, the principles by which the website is built. And so that you kind of don't get into situations where things get watered down over a period of time, because you're always referring back to this constitution.
That's a brand. It's like branding guidelines.
No, well, not yeah, but not just for branding, for the way a website is built.
Style guide, then.
No, because a style guide doesn't cover that kind of stuff, does it?
It should do. Some of them do.
Well, style guide by definition covers style, does it not?
Well, it's how things are used. I suppose often web style guides are things that aren't actually put together that often. So from that point of view, I suppose this is quite a good idea. I don't like the word constitution. I think that's why I've got a problem.
So you're just wiping out the whole concept over a semantic disagreement.
No, that's what the idea is, that some sites already do this. They basically lay down the law about what you are allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And we've even written documents that state that kind of thing about how you're supposed to write content, how you're supposed to use images, size of images, all that kind of thing. And that is a very good idea to have that. So yeah, I'm saying it's a good idea, I guess. Just don't like the word.
Okay.
So I'm in a grumpy mood as well.
Oh dear, the thing's this. This is going to be a great show. No one's going to make it.
I think it's
the
good. We're arguing, and that everyone likes that.
Okay.
Or disagreeing.
Disagreeing. Another thing that I wanted to just mention is that there is an excellent and very, very extensive article that has been added to the sitepoint.com website that is the definitive article on HTML and answers every kind of issue you ever want to know about HTML. So please check that out. It's great for beginners, and it's great for people that's been doing HTML for years. It's great for beginners because it answers all of those questions that people inevitably have about working with HTML, and it's great for old hands like myself that it's amazing how much you forget. Do you know what I mean? If you're not using certain things on a regular basis, it slips out of your head, and this article is a really good point of reference for people like me too. So go along and check that out. As normal, I will obviously post a link to this in the show notes. If you go to boagworld.com/podcast, select this episode, which is 57, and there'll be a link in the show notes there. Final thing to say is, well, I've kind of already mentioned it, I'm off to the States next week for the Refresh 06 conference, where I will be speaking. As a result, there will be no podcast next week. I'm sorry, I can hear the whales gnashing of teeth across the world.
We'll have a really good one the week after.
Yeah, except that will be a day late, because I don't fly back until the Monday.
It'll be a really, really good one.
And I'll be really jet-lagged on the Tuesday. So
that'll be great. Yeah. Be out of your mind. Yeah. Be lovely.
So that'll be good. So for people that have asked, this is going to be podcast at some point in the future. Refresh are going to release their various talkie slots, like most of these things do. So you will get to hear it, even if you can't attend the conference. If you are going, I would love to meet up with you. That would be great, and we'll find a time to do so. So drop me an email if you're going to be around in the Orlando area. Even if you're not coming to the conference, I will deign to meet you.
Yes, I will deign to meet you.
Yes, I will stoop and talk to the lowly people that cannot afford to come to my conference. My conference.
I enjoyed it.
So, I'm sorry, no show next week. We did consider letting Marcus do it by himself, but then decided that he had nothing of value to add. So, there we go,
stop it now. I've just got too much work on, because Paul's going away as well.
So, everybody's leaving you, Marcus.
Yeah.
You might have to do something constructive for once in your life. Okay, so that's the news. Let's move on to our main feature for today. Bugworld.com. Okay, so back in, when was it? September of this year, there was an article on the Alista Part website, which was called 12 Lessons for Those Afraid of CSS and Standards. And I read through it, and I thought it was probably one of the most honest articles I've ever read about web standards and building with web standards. And it was really good. For those that are considering getting into standards, but also for those that have started and just found it a nightmare. So for a start, I highly recommend you check out the article. And I was going to just kind of rip it off, basically, and cover the kind of issues that they did. But I figured it was a lot better to actually get Ben in, who was the guy that wrote the article in the first place, and just get his thoughts on what he did and why he did it. So what's coming up is a brief interview with Ben, and I hope you find it useful, and I hope you'll forgive me for bringing up the issue of standards yet again. I know I did get in some trouble on the forum for this. So here you go. This is my interview with Ben. Okay, so today joining me is Ben Hinnick, who has recently written an article for the A List Apart website. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
It's good to have you with us today. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. And the article that Ben has written is called The 12 Reasons for Those Afraid of CSS and Standards. And when I saw this article, Ben, it not only did it make me laugh, because you said out loud a lot of the things that those that are passionate about standards are afraid to draw people's attention to.
Such as?
Well, I mean, just the very first point you bring up, which is everything you know is wrong, sort of.
Yeah, I couldn't think of a better way to put it.
No, yeah. I mean, that's great, and that's exactly what it feels like when you start with standards, and that's kind of set the tone for the article for me, and it really did not only amuse me, but there was a lot of real honesty in there, and we provided some really solid advice for people starting out. So my immediate reaction on reading it was, hey, we've got to cover this on the Boag World podcast, and then I thought, well, even better, let's get the guy in that wrote it and hear what he has to say about it. So that's how you've ended up on the show, Ben. Hope that's okay with you.
I certainly don't mind. I can certainly use the attention, and it's really interesting for me. Let me take a step back on that. This article turned out not to polarize anybody really at all. There were in the comments and some of the feedback, you know, there was this idea, oh, but you're still understating how difficult it is for those of us in the real world. And you know, it's true that that feedback may be coming from people whose political circumstances at their jobs are extremely difficult, or where they're not taking the right approach to the challenges of introducing standards to their organization, which I understand you covered in a recent podcast yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and I, in my experience, which is one of the things that I tried to touch on in the article, is that, you know, when you're dealing with a client or an employer and they've been doing things with tables or just doing things poorly with or without tables, you know, in terms of, you know, production standards and best practices and such things, there's so much inertia there that a lot of times it can be challenging without regard to the technical merit or anything else of the argument. It can be a real challenge to introduce a new way of doing things regardless of what's right or wrong with that. Mm. You know, there's just so much, you know, there's a, you know, like I said, it's inertia. Well, you know, we've been doing it this way and it's not broken,
so why fix it, kind of attitude.
Right. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that right there is one of the hardest arguments to overcome, you know, when you're getting into more of a dialogue with these people, and you know, the manager comes back and says, well, what we've been doing works just fine. But at the same time, you know, if you're just starting out, you know, you're stumbling, you're running around, you're learning things every day, it's chewing up a lot of time. And so your project sponsors don't typically see the benefits right off the bat unless you're willing to put in a lot of extra hours, to eat a lot of extra hours as part of this learning process.
Yeah.
And I think that right there is what's so frustrating and challenging for a lot of these people who know tables, is that they're up against deadlines and they don't want to eat hours and they don't want to embarrass themselves in front of project sponsors or you know, managers or employers or what have you. So they just say, to heck with it. You know, as we just said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Mm.
And when I look at CSS uptake and the challenges faced in CSS uptake, that right there is the single biggest obstacle to improving those rates.
Yeah, I mean, totally. That was what, again, I've kind of said this, this is what I liked so much about the article, is that you were very upfront about the problems and the challenges that people face. I mean, let's just go through a few of the kind of lessons that, you know, that you raise in it and how to deal with them. I mean, let's do the number one that I've already mentioned. Everything you know about building websites is wrong, sort of. I mean, what were you getting at there? Where were you coming from?
Mostly that if you go into it with the same old assumptions, oh, well, you know, your navigation has to be at the top of the source order because it's going to be right there in the left column, you know, first row, first column. You know, that's one assumption that gets thrown out automatically. Second assumption, related, you know, is, you know, you're gonna be able to count on your left column going all the way to the bottom of the page. That's another assumption that has, I mean, not that it can't be done, it just, you know, for a beginner especially, they're gonna sit there and scratch their head for several minutes trying to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, it took me a lot longer than several minutes, I can tell you that.
But the, you know, and so, you know, there are ways to make one behave like the other in most cases, but that's the biggest thing. The two behave differently, and they don't, you can't, it's very difficult also to combine the two and get the best of both. Most of the time when you try to combine the two, you get the worst of both.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that I left out, you know, is don't try mixing tables for layout and CSS for layout unless you know exactly what you are doing. You know, it's a big time investment to learn how to use layout tables. It's a big investment to learn how to use CSS. And it's a big investment to learn how to use them both together.
I mean, it's a very demoralizing moment, isn't it? I mean, I remember when I sat down and I read Jeffrey Zeldman's book, uh-huh. and I had this moment of realization that, heck, I'm going to have to learn this. This is important. This is the way things are going. But it was so demoralizing because I knew that I was throwing out so much of what I'd learned about how you construct websites.
In terms of production techniques, absolutely. That's the thing is, in effect, you have to, you know, you have to wipe your slate clean, and basically go, okay, now I've got, you know, a mess of divs or what have you. How do I structure these? What purpose do they serve? And what, you know, what do I have to do to get them looking the way I want? Where with tables, you know, okay, you know, with tables, you can fairly reliably say, okay, you know, I can put, you know, I can put the origin of a cell at these coordinates, and these coordinates more or less, and or, you know, have my grid lined up just so. Mm. Which is one thing tables are very good at doing well is maintaining a grid. And, you know, where with CSS you're, you know, you've got to learn quite a bit in order to have that same consistency of a grid. You basically, you know, you have to throw out all of your assumptions and basically start over from scratch as far as learning how to make the markup and the presentation interact. And several people, you know, dropped hints to me. There's a table that I put into the article.
Yeah.
A data table. I don't know. You know, that can be considered either ironic or perverse. Okay, so I have, you know, it's titled in the article, it's titled Tables versus Semantic Markup. And several people, you know, indicated to me that they didn't quite understand what the left two columns meant. And so I wanted to touch on that a little bit and see if maybe I could shed some light on where I was going with that.
It's worth saying, just before you explain that, if you go along to alistapart.com/articles/12, as in the number 12, lessons, CSS and standards.
Uppercase CSS and standards.
Then you'll be able to actually see this table. I'll put a link to it in the show notes as well for people.
So, okay. You know, I started with, you know, the characteristics of, you know, markup for table layout, and than the corresponding properties of markup that's intended to complement CSS-driven presentation. And several people, like I said, indicated to me that they didn't quite see where I was going, which is why the implications column is there to translate that into standard English for people who aren't really thinking on an information science level, which is a big part of what this is about. So, when you're working with tables, everything happens in series, or your markup is very serial, in the sense that you've got it goes row, cell, 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 row, cell, 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 cell. It doesn't, where it sits in the source order winds up determining more or less where it goes on the page. You don't have that restriction when you're working with CSS.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point that there are differences in even the way that you kind of view your content and you view the markup that you're creating. Can I just flip on to the second lesson, because we're in danger of running out of time, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but this particular one was of interest to me.
Oh,
because
okay.
Again, you said something that I thought was very honest, which is you said that, look, if you work with standards, you're not going to it's not going to look exactly the same everywhere in every browser or in every situation, at least not without some serious grief.
Mm-hmm.
What led you to say that and to bring that up as a point, other than the fact that it's true?
Several of the points I made are kind of related, and in this particular instance, there's this wish that if I write a rule for, if I write a given style sheet rule, then I should be able to expect, this is in a perfect world, I should be able to expect that, it's going to look the same in one browser to the next, to the next, to the next. Now, there are a number of reasons why this isn't true, but the bottom line is that it isn't true.
So, I mean, the logical thing to say from that, as somebody that hasn't yet made the switch to standards, is that, a point like that is fairly damaging to the case of standardites, people that say you should switch. So, is it a matter of a different way of thinking that we're in a situation where we're kind of so entrenched in the what tables gave us that we can't think outside of that, and that actually we need to perhaps let go of pixel perfect control? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
I think that would be the ideal outcome. I also don't feel that, because most of the designers who are out there comping things up these days and making good money at it come almost exclusively from print backgrounds.
Yeah.
Where things are controlled down to the 64th of an inch or down to a single point or two. In print, and I made this point in my other A List Apart article, is that yes, in print, everything is taking place on a sheet of paper with fixed dimensions, fixed physical properties, fixed interaction with inks, and everything can be, divvied up, divided up, split up into a Cartesian grid in increments of 600 or 1200 or what have you. On the web, we do not have that luxury. And so you have to start thinking, if you're designing, you have to consider what it's going to look like proportionally.
Yeah.
I usually start out with more or less what a full chrome canvas looks like at 800 by 600. That's usually my baseline when I start designing things. But, I have to take into account, if this is a fixed width design, what's it going to look like when someone is running, is running maximized at 1440 by 900 or even 1280 by 1024? Is it still going to look the way I want it to look? CSS brings completely different strengths to the table.
Yeah, it does. But a lot of your article almost tackle a lot of the weaknesses and the things that I guess there's been so much written about the strengths and not as much written about the weaknesses. Another one that you put down, which I thought was a very interesting one, is you come out and say that standards-based design has a longer lead time and that's an inevitable part of it. That was quite an interesting point to say. What led you to add that one in?
Well, that's based entirely on my own personal experience. In that, if I have a table-based layout, I can predict the behavior that's going to result from that layout fairly easily. And I touch on this later in the article to the effect that, you know, they've had lots of time to work out table rendering, and from one browser to the next, tables tend to behave pretty much the same.
Hmm.
You know, and there's not really much differentiation. But you have so much differentiation between browsers, and then you have IE6, which by itself has been a huge millstone around the neck of anybody who's dead serious about working with CSS and standards-based production. You know, if I'm one guy in a shop and I don't know about what's often referred to as the Holly hack,
yeah,
or fixing IE6's problems with floats and things alike, then I might bump into a fix for those kinds of problems, or I have to go out and find them myself. Mm. And a lot of times they can't be found. They have to be stumbled upon.
But you do, and I mean, on that particular point, you do have a positive end to it. When you talk about the long lead times being an inevitable part of it and the bug fixing and all the rest of it, you do say that the time that you spend testing and debugging a layout is kind of repaid.
Oh, not kind of. Definitely repaid.
Yeah.
If you do it right, that is the last time you ever have to manipulate the markup associated with that content.
Yeah.
Your templates are nailed down.
Yeah.
And so all you know, client comes back, wants a redesign. Oh, well, you know, spend a couple of days working on a new style sheet. It's as easy as that. Or, oh, they need to add content. Well, your templates have same source order, which is discussed later in the article. And, you know, everything's clean, so you know exactly where to put the new content and exactly how to style it up before. As soon as you've gotten the work order, you're able to go, okay, the content's going to go here, and here are the styles we're going to write for it.
I know. I mean, that, to me, if there was one thing that completely sold me on CSS, it's the long-term benefits of it. You know, we work with, I don't know about you, but we work with clients over years in some cases, going back and revisiting their site again and again and again. And it's just such a pleasure that every change they want to make to their site is so easy compared
right.
to what it would have been.
A change that, you know, when you're stuck with tables, a change that would require a ground-up redesign or would take several days or a week to implement from end to end, some of these can be done in 5 or 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it might take as long as a couple of hours, but, you know, what does the client want? Do they want you to bill them 2 hours, or do they want you to bill them 30 hours? Gee, mm-hmm. That's a really hard choice for me to make, Paul.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm the client, do I want to spend that extra, $2,000? No.
Exactly. And I think most clients will recognize the value of doing a little bit of extra work up front to put them in a position, such a better position over the long term. They're going to save themselves money over the long term, so.
Except that in practice, there's a lot of concern about upfront costs. And that's why one of the things that I've started talking about with some people is, okay, how can we start putting together baseline style sheets, templates, things of the like that, you know, how do we write and document these things so that someone can just go to a site, whether it's webstandards.org or position is everything or WordPress or wherever. I don't care where they get the template. One of the things that standard supporters need to do is start working on, you know, on and documenting templates, themes, things of that nature that will work straight out of the box.
Yeah. I mean, that's something, to be honest, that we do internally at my web design company, Headscape, is we actually have a plethora of XHTML templates that we use as the basis for any site that we start building. And alongside that is some very, very basic CSS templates as well that just do, you know, one column, two column layouts or whatever. so that we've kind of leapfrogging that initial stage and getting straight into things. We find that incredibly useful, very time saving as well.
Right, and you know, putting those kinds of resources out there so that they can be tapped by relative newcomers.
Yeah, that's what we
need to do. And the kind of people that we're talking about here, the ones that are, you know, trying to give web standards a more significant role in the organization for which they are working, or, you know, a new client or what have you, being able to make those resources available to those people, who aren't in a position to take a risk, could turn out to be a huge win.
Were there things that you wanted to put in that you kind of ended up having to leave out because the article was getting too long? Is there other stuff that could have gone in there that didn't?
Thing that I, originally brought up in an earlier draft of the article and then realized I was leaving out something far more important was, about working with strict rendering modes. Making sure that... you definitely want a strict rendering mode, which is well documented on both MSDN and the Mozilla website as to how to enable that, because that way you know you're working with the same box model, which is documented in the CSS specification, from one site to the next and from one browser to the next, which is also another source of these differences that people often get into that wind up eating up so much time.
Yeah,
if you can at least be sure that every browser that you're building for is going to be using the same box model to lay out your content, that by itself can be quite a time saver. And then you can decide whether or not to leave Internet Explorer 5 to its own devices, which I'm hoping now that IE7 is out, more shops will advocate, ceasing support for Internet Explorer 5. Just make sure that these sites don't blow out in Internet Explorer 5. Make sure that they can still be followed. Okay, fine, they're not pretty, but making them pretty means, billing another 10 or 20 hours on the project. And, putting it to a client that way and saying, do you really want to spend that extra $1,500 or $2,000 or $25 or $3,000? And saying, do you really want to spend that money just for these, just for these few percent that are using Internet Explorer 5?
I mean, it's basic return on investment, isn't it, really?
Right, and framing it that way rather than buying into the dogma and going, well, it has to look the same for everybody.
Yeah.
And saying, these problems exist, so we're just going to avoid them. Oh, you don't want to avoid them? Well, that's going to cost you something,
Yeah, I mean, that's what we started doing, to be honest. We list the browsers that we support by default, and then any additional browsers above and beyond that, are charged
separately.
Right,
and I really wish that more people would do that up front.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much, Ben. I'm sorry that we didn't have longer to talk, because it's a fascinating article, and we've only just kind of, done just a few of the points that you've raised. So if you're a web designer and you're listening to this podcast, I'd definitely check out the article on alistapart.com. We will link to it from the show notes. Thank you very much, Ben, and I'm sure we'll get you back on the show in the future.
Okay. Thanks for listening. And the other thing that I'll, perhaps at some risk that I'll go ahead and point out, is that my personal site is linked from the footer of the article. And all of my contact information is provided there. So, anyone who wants to, contact me briefly, to follow up on what they've heard today is more than welcome to do so.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, obviously now flood Ben with thousands of emails. and make him regret that. Now, thanks very much, Ben. It's great to have you on the show.
Bugworld.com.
So that was excellent. I really enjoyed having the opportunity to chat with Ben. He certainly knows his stuff, and he's just so honest.
Yeah.
I mean, for anybody, I know I said it hundreds of times in the interview, but anybody that writes an article where his number one lesson for those afraid of CSS and standards is everything you know is wrong.
Yes, it's all wrong.
It's all wrong, you're doomed.
Wipe your mind here.
Yes. So I just thought that was great, and I wanted to get him on the show, and I'm sorry if that was somewhat self-indulgent of me, but I enjoyed myself anyway. So there we go. Now, obviously, because we weren't supposed to be talking about this subject this week, I've not kind of opened up a thread on the forum specifically dedicated to, you know, the subject of starting off with standards. But unsurprisingly, there are a load of threads on CSS on the forum. And they're really worth reading, and there's some great debate and discussion about. There's threads like Why Paul is Wrong, which I think we've mentioned before, which relates to standards. There's another one about CSS is retarded, which is quite an interesting one as well. But there's one in particular that I wanted to share with you because it kind of... I resonated with this. Do you know what I mean? When you see your heart goes out to the pain somebody is suffering. So, Marcus, do you want to read this?
I'll be this person.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I have to read it in a kind of...
You have to do it in a pained and...
I'm just going to read it.
Okay, go on.
Okay, I think Bergworld is awesome.
Yes! There you
go. There's a good start. Because it stresses the importance of separating style from content. Where have I heard that before? I support all the pros behind doing this, but I am tired of spending so much time adjusting CSS. I don't know which browser is correct. I have Firefox 2 and IE7 installed with an IE6 backup. And I would say Firefox, because when I attempt to do something, it tends to work in Firefox first, and I end up spending too much time adjusting it to work in IE. Again, where have I heard that before? Maybe this is because I'm not an expert CSS coder and don't know all the ins and outs that each browser requires, but the idea of a code that works differently depending on which browser it is in is lame.
Yes. There's nothing to say on that, is there, other than, yes, you are right. The world is a painful place. Deal with it. I mean, he's kind of just reflected back a lot of what we've heard from Ben today. And yeah, CSS is tough, but ultimately the benefits of it outweigh the negatives, and it is a pain in the neck sometimes. You may remember a little while back, I did a review of a book called CSS, The Missing Manual, which I wasn't overly complimentary about. It was written by David McFarlane, who actually listens to this podcast sometimes, so I felt immensely guilty not giving it 100% glowing report. And the only reason I didn't was because I'm not as good with kind of referencey books. I like to read a book from cover to cover. But recently I heard David interviewed on one of the Twit podcasts, the Inside the Net podcast. And you can get to this particular episode if you want to listen to it by going to www.twit.tv/ITN39. And that is the interview with David. And for anybody that's kind of facing the pain of CSS, you really might want to check out this episode because David was absolutely brilliant on the show. Again, was very honest about the problems with CSS and very constructive as well about how to overcome them and things like that. So definitely check out that particular show from Inside the Net. And also, it made me, listening to that show, it made me revisit David's book. And to be honest, kind of refine my view a little bit.
Well, say you were wrong, basically.
I said refine my view.
Yeah, that's Paul speak for I was wrong, everyone.
Okay. Don't mess with me today, Marcus. yeah.
I was about to say that you designers have got it easy with just two browsers. How about that?
Well, compared to the people that are doing the mobile web.
Well, yeah, imagine if there were 10 browsers for the internet that each had a 10% share of the market and each were all completely different.
Well, there are 10 browsers.
Well,
pretty
not
much.
Not with
Let's
a 10% share each.
Can I come up with 10? Right, so there's multiple versions of Firefox that all do things slightly differently, but I'll be kind and split those into two, the 1.5 ones and the 2, all right? Mm-hmm. Then there's IE7, IE6, IE5.5, IE5. Then we've got Safari.
So we've got Firefox and IE. That's two.
No, because the different versions are rendered differently.
Yeah, but then you could have different versions of these other ones that I'm imagining there might be. Imagine that. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. You're just making up hypothetical rubbish.
Yeah, anyway, I'm enjoying every minute of it.
I was backpedalling on the CSS missing manual book, wasn't I?
Well, that was right. So what were the exact words? Refining your view.
I was refining my
remember
view.
That one.
It's a good one. I like yeah. it. So, yeah, I mean, kind of looking at this guy. This is a very good book if you... what am I trying to say? If you want a complete reference that covers pretty much everything. So if you're going from the absolute basics right the way through to some fairly advanced stuff, it's very comprehensive from that point of view. So listen to the Inside the Net interview, and if, like me, it changes your mind about David McFarlane's book, then you might want to get your hands on that as well. So yes, I sympathise with the pain of those that are struggling with CSS for the first time. And I can't remember who it was that posted that comment on the forum. I should have made a note of it, really. But I feel your pain. One other thing I wanted to mention on the forum before we move on is that we have a Northeast meetup happening, a Boag World meetup. Well, actually, it's not exclusively for Boag World listeners, but it's being arranged by Boag World listeners. So if you are in the Northeast of England, you might want to pop along to the forum, and under the general thread, you will find a discussion about a meetup in the Northeast that's going to happen soon. So check that out. It's really good that they're like just getting on and organising it without me doing anything.
Excellent.
I like this whole forum community thing. It means I can sit on my arse, which is what I'll be saying when we next talk about communities in our next podcast. I'll be saying they're great because you get to sit around on your arse. There we go. My professional opinion. Okay, let's move on to today's question. Okay, today's question is from George in Hawaii, which, as Mark has just said off mic, is about as far away as you can get from us. Shows how little he knows of geography,
yes.
Because that would be New Zealand, Marcus.
I thought Scotland was as far away as you could get, or the northeast. There you go.
Yeah, northeast. Oh, that is, yes, another world. Ah, bless. Right, yes, so here is George's question from Hawaii.
Hello, Paul and Marcus. This is George. I run a very small web design business in Hawaii, and I thoroughly enjoy your podcast. I'm currently, as I just counted, subscribed to about 60 different podcasts, and Boag World is one of the only dozen or so that I actually listen to regularly, so good on ya. My question is, where do you get some of your design ideas from? I occasionally, like now, find myself in a rut using the same layouts and design features over and over again. I'd love to change it up a little. I'm actually in the process of redoing my family website the same way I did my church's website. How sad is that? And I'm just looking for places to find some inspiration. Thanks. By the way, I was going to trash Marcus a little, but I saw a pic of him and his kid on Boag World, and as a father, I didn't have the heart to do it. Thanks for the great podcast, guys.
The man listens to 60-plus podcasts, or subscribes to 60-plus podcasts.
Feel sorry for his family.
You can't ever get anything done, George. Mate, cut it down. You only need one. We all know which one that will be.
Very nice that he had nice things to say about a picture of me and my son, but what on earth could he possibly have been thinking that he could say bad to me? I don't understand.
Wow. I mean, there's so many opportunities. I don't even know where to start to answer that question.
What was it I was last week? I can't remember. Chief Official Badass or something like that. I much preferred that.
Anyway, moving on to your question, George, and not just picking holes in the way you asked it. On the way you said Hawaii, or however. Mm. Yes, that might be my interpretation, actually. Yes, I mean, it's a good question, and it's a common problem, and I think anybody that's involved in design in any form, whether it be web design or architecture or anything else, experiences this problem of where to get your inspiration from. And I guess, I think we've touched on it before, but I kind of try and look outside of the web, because otherwise things become very static and repetitive. So I look at things like advertising, books, architecture, signage, TV, and I even look at like nature and natural forms and things like that. So I'm kind of always got a bit of an eye out for design inspiration. I mean, something that I don't do, which I think is a good idea, is to just carry a little camera around with you. And, you know, just take photographs of things as you see them and print them up and shove them on the wall. And, you know, when you're next doing a project, it's a good way to be inspired. One good example of this is that I was doing a website a while back for which was some kind of government agency thing to support market towns and coastal towns in the southwest of the UK. And I happen to live in a market town in the southwest of the UK. So instead of sitting in my stuffy old office, I actually went outside and I, you know, took pictures of the architecture and the and
blinked
stuff
a lot
and,
for a while.
Yeah, I did. Got very disorientated and started shaking uncontrollably.
Got a nosebleed.
Yeah. Oh, I'm getting hysterical now. Will this show never end?
Advertising is one of the best things. You mentioned that briefly at the start, but you think about it, for TV advertising, billboard advertising, that kind of thing, you've got you know, the world's creative minds working in advertising, or quite a lot of them.
Excuse me, the world's creative minds work in web design.
Yes, of course they do. Yes, of course they do. But the point of it is you're always seeing it all the time on the telly, on, you know, as you're walking around driving your car, and you're getting people's. Some of it's rubbish, but quite a lot of it is stupendously good.
Yeah,
and it's going to inspire you.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a lot better than just visiting these CSS gallery websites, you know, and just kind of ending up ripping off bits of design there. If you are going to do that, and I'm not, you know, there's nothing wrong with being inspired by the sites, but when you go, what I do is I will take a screen grab of a tiny little part of the website that I like. So rather than taking a grab of the whole website, I just take a little grab of a part of it to kind of jog my memory about what I liked about that site, because it's that stops you from just ripping things off directly if you take that kind of approach. However, I will say, you mentioned, you know, that your church website is the same as your home website and that kind of thing, which obviously is an ideal, but not all repetition in design is bad, because there are things like design conventions and user expectations. Like every now and again I hit the, oh, do I, you know, I'm going to do another site which has got a banner at the top with horizontal navigation, and it's like, oh, boring, done it, you know, kind of thing. But actually, there is something to be said for consistency. Users expect to find the search box in the top right-hand corner. I mean, we did a usability test session on a website recently where they put the site branding in the top right, and then their strap line in the top left. It was a competitive analysis, I think it was, not a user testing. And it was like, it was so disconcerting because you didn't realise what the name of the company was. You thought the strap line was the logo, and it just kind of threw you because it wasn't where things you meant, you know, you expected things to be. So yeah. not all kind of repetition is bad, George. Anyway, I think that about covers George's question. Would you agree?
I do, yes.
That's good, and I'm glad we have listeners in Hawaii. We have, actually, listeners all over the place. This map is beginning to fill out. It's only got a fraction of our audience. It's got about, like, 150-odd people on our little Frapper map, which you can get to at boagworld.com/map.html. And if you want to put your pin in, we would love to see where you are in the world. We have some really... We've got somebody in Romania, which I think is quite cool. Yeah, all kinds of weird places. Quite a couple in South America, and yeah, it's good stuff. Anyway, let's move on.
Bugworld.com.
Okay, so that pretty much wraps it up for this week. As normal, thanks to our sponsors, which is headscape.co.uk, the web design company myself and Marcus work for, that have been very generous with their time, or the amount of time that I'm allowed to spend faffing around with Boag World rather than doing proper work. And also to podvine.com. Podvine.com is the web design podcast network that we are a part of, so check that out if you're interested in supporting any of the any of the shows that are involved in that network. Marcus, do you have a joke to end our glorious podcast with?
Well, the best podcast of all time.
Yes. There.
Yes, I do.
Go.
Okay, a family were on their way to the hospital where their 16-year-old daughter, I'll make her a 14-year-old daughter because I've got one of those, their 14-year-old daughter was scheduled to undergo a tonsillectomy. During the ride, they talked
hang
about...
Hang on a minute. What? So you decided to make this story about your daughter going in and having an operation in hospital. That's nice, isn't it?
Well, she doesn't need a tonsillectomy, so it's not going to happen.
So you're imagining bad things for your daughter's health.
It's kind of relevant to the punchline, okay, Paul?
All right, I'll wait.
Okay, it's more about teenage girls than anything else.
Okay.
Anyway. All right, so
you're gonna going to you're going to be rude about your 14-year-old daughter.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, yeah, scheduled to undergo a tonsillectomy. During the ride, they talked about how the procedure would be performed. Dad, she asked, how are they going to keep my mouth open during the surgery? That's easy, he said. They're going to give you a phone. I never answer the phone in my house anymore. Ever. It's just not for me. Ever. I just ignore it.
Aww.
So there you go. These are the things you're going to have to... You've got a son. They're not quite so bad.
No, when they get to teenage years, they just grunt a lot.
Yeah, head in fridge.
Actually, we need to be really careful because there are a lot of teenage listeners to this show. Admittedly, most of them are blokes, so my grunting comment's probably going to be worse than your phone comment. Oh, dear. Oh, well.
Since when have you ever worried about what people think, Paul?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, right.
I'm a sensitive soul. Nobody realises it. Why would I be nervous about speaking in Florida if I didn't care what people thought? Yeah, see? So anyway, there will be no show next week, as we have already said. In 2 weeks' time, there will be a slightly jet-lagged show from us, or from me anyway, about building a community-focused website. I'm so sorry that we haven't done it this week, as we said, but it's going to be worth waiting for. It's going to be stupendous. That's not a word, is it?
Stupendous. That's kind of a good one, though. I quite like it.
Tremendous
and stupendous altogether.
Yes, stupendous. Yes. Anyway, as normal, you can send in your audio questions by going to odio.com/sendmeamessage/BoagWorld or email me at paul@boagworld.com. Please note, however, that my responses may be less than prompt over the next few weeks as my life is disintegrating. So you may be better if you have a question going along to our forum and posting there. Thanks so much for bearing with us this week, and we promise that we will get better. Thanks for listening. Bye.